Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number
one. Hello, everyone. My name is Matt Weston, and you're listening to Val Red Radio. And tonight, I'm joined by the biggest, fattest, drunkest home mall, BFD. Hey, how's it going?
Hey, I am fantastic. It's awesome to be here on another Tuesday evening with you, Big Matt.
Yeah, there's nothing I'd rather be doing as well. I'm having a cup of coffee, and I'm rock hard and ready to roll. And so, BFD, did you know that football games are 60 minutes long?
I did not know that because I'm really bad at math. And I couldn't figure that out all by myself with my shoes still on.
I would say, I guess you have more in common with the Texans other than being a fan of the team as well. And you know, and this one, they looked really great for their first three drives. Oswald threw two touchdowns. They scored their first three possessions. They kicked a field goal at the half, and then they didn't score again. And so why did the pass game have success on the first few drives going to the tight ends? Because that was kind of the key there. Was because Tennessee was playing, you know, cover two, playing two safeties deep, and they were fitting the ball in between those pockets and between the linebackers and the safeties?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. I think the second part of it is why the performance went downhill was because the flaming thumbtack started bringing more pressure. And it was really funny. It was really funny. And I really wanted to mention this on the podcast today because the announcer started talking that Dick LeBeau was bringing up more exotic blitzes against Osweiler. And I would go back and watch what exotic meant. And it was rushing the four guys on the line of scrimmage. There was nothing exotic about when they started getting more pressure on Oswald, and that's because Chris Clark and Derek Newton could not block against basic speed rushes. Especially Chris Clark was awful this game, trying to block against speed rushes, and he had a real nightmare of a game. But they weren't doing much exotic stuff. I mean, every once in a while, zone type blitz, disguising who's blitzing a little bit better. But really, it was mostly a basic scheme, and they were getting to the quarterback with an alarming intensity.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't really pick that up in that game. I think probably because I wasn't rewinding and that sort of thing. And I was mainly watching kind of the secondary and trying to watch the routes more so than the pressure. And so I didn't really see that. And the Texans use their tight ends a lot more in this game. Is this a trend that you're going to see moving forward, or is this just kind of like a one-time occurrence just because of how the Titans kind of played, off a little bit in that first quarter?
Well, this is the second game in a row, right, where we've seen this behavior. Is teams aren't going to let DeAndre and Will Fuller the Fifth beat them. And they've decided that because if your interior guys, like Jalen Strong, can be covered by tight end throughout the game, then, yeah, I mean, you're going to take away the field stretchers, right? And so, Strong had an especially really, really horrible game. But this is what we're going to see the rest of the season. We said it going into the New England game. New England's going to be the first team to take away the deep ball. They did it. Now, every team knows what the playbook is. Just let the Texans throw it to their non-athletic inside personnel, at least until we get Braxton Miller back. Let him throw to Ryan Griffin. Let him throw to C.J. Fedora, which he did have a very nice touchdown catch. But still, he's not a guy who's going to do anything with the ball after the catch. So teams are really focused on taking away the big plays and taking away Brock's two best throws, the fade and the deep dime-dropping ball, because he's – and we'll talk about Brock in more detail. But those are his two best passes.
I think at this point those are kind of his only two passes. And earlier today, I was kind of thinking about DeAndre Hopkins and how wild it is this year he's covered and they're not able to give him the ball compared to last year, because last year they had even less receiving talent. They had Brandon Weeden throwing him passes, T.J. Yates, Brian Hoyer, Ryan Mallett, and, you know, he was still catching 150 yards, catching touchdowns, you know, catching, you know, 7-8 passes a game. This year he isn't. And I think really the biggest difference is that Houston's going to a lot of, like, two wide sets with two tight ends, or they go – they split out – or they go, you know, one by three, but go slot left and have Hopkins on the right side. And last year what they did was they put just Hopkins by himself one side of the field over and over again, and they would overload the opposite side. So they had to go, you know, trips left to left, put DeAndre Hopkins on the right-hand side by himself, and that would leave him one-on-one versus the corner because the safety had a focus, had a roll over their coverage to make sure those three guys were covered on the left-hand side. And that's why Hopkins was able to get open so often, because he was doing his own thing in man coverage, and they weren't really running routes to get him open at all. He did great at it. And this year I think we're seeing just a lot of, you know, basic kind of coverage where you have two guys on the left, one on the right, or one individual receiver on each side with Fuller. And I think that's kind of a problem that I've seen with Hopkins so far also. And so I think with the tight ends, I mean, they should be using more – then they'll be better off using more trips packages with them instead of just going two tight end sets, especially because they can't block very well too. And so I think that's an opportunity that's there for Houston to kind of use it as teams keep playing these two deep looks with the, you know, cover two and two safeties back.
Yeah, I think it goes a lot, as we're talking about this, I think it says a lot about the team's faith in Jalen Strong to be a third wide receiver today, that you're still going out there, you're throwing out some really lacking talent in Ryan Griffin and in C.J. Fedorowicz. Yes, they had fine games. Griffin had a fine game the week before that. These still aren't guys who you want to get the ball to on a regular basis. They really aren't. These need to be your desperation guys for targets. And, you know, the fact that Fuller got 9 and DeAndre got 6 is not enough targets for those two guys. And DeAndre caught one of those 6 targets. That's, you know, you got to get the ball to your – those are your feasters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't watch much of Strong as well. And, I mean, like, again, like, I wanted him to see him more in the slot, and I really didn't notice that at all in this game, too. Whenever I saw him out there, he was playing next to Fuller outside. And so I saw the opportunities there to put him in the slot and put him against, you know, Bryce McCain. That seemed like a good matchup on paper, putting the taller Strong against McCain, but we haven't even seen that also. And also with Strong, we haven't even seen enough reps on the field to kind of get a feel at all about his play. Like, is he just a poor route runner? Is he running the wrong routes? Is there just, like, a lack of communication with him and the quarterback? Does he have bad hands? You know, I mean, I guess really the only example we've seen of him being bad is hitting that New England cornerback in the face in the fourth quarter out of some, you know, fussy frustration. And I really have no idea at all what's going on with Strong, but I still think that opportunity is there too to put him in the slot. But I think there's a lot more going on in the practice field and in the weight room and people who actually work with the team probably better feel, or of course they have better feel, but they're the ones who understand what's going on. Because based on the information we have available, it's just not, you know, it's not there. There's no kind of explanation for it.
Yeah, I mean, look at his game on Sunday. He 5 receptions for 31 yards, 6.2 yards per catch. 6.2 yards per catch. What is he, a fullback? So he's getting
DeMarco Murray
5 yards a target. DeMarco Murray got averaged 12 yards a catch. Tajay Sharp,
yeah.
7.5. Kendall Wright, 7. I mean, we're talking, that's just some really crappy numbers there by somebody who caught 5 balls for 31 yards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it kind of goes to that kind of automatic check down thing where they're not having really good routes in the short intermediate game whenever the deeper steps of Fuller and Hopkins is covered. And I think it's just a lot of outs and flats, which are fine on first down, that sort of thing. But, again, they have to do something. And, you know, I feel like I trust Bill O'Brien to be able to do that to create better – your route combinations to be able to attack those parts of the field. And so I guess I want to talk about Lamar Miller before we talk about Osweiler. Because in this game, he had another pedestrian 82 yards and 19 carries. And again, most of his runs came between the tackles. I think only 3 or 4 of his runs came outside, middle, or guard. And, you know, I think the run game, there's this idea out that the run game is the biggest problem with this offense. Or do you think it's Osweiler himself? Because so far, and are they just using the run game as an excuse for his play so far? And, I mean, the running at this point has been kind of incessant, but hasn't been good. So what do you think is the biggest problem with this offense? Do you think it's just Osweiler himself, or do you think it's actually the run game?
I think it's the offensive line. I think the offensive line's not doing their job. I mean, you look at at Football Outsiders numbers, and it has our offensive line right at average, 18th, I think, or something like that. Right at average. If you look at Pro Football Focus's grade, and they are grading our offensive line horrible across the board. So there's a disconnect. And again, let's take this always with the caveat with Pro Football Focus. There's a lot we know. You know, this isn't, you should not base your football decisions on Pro Football Focus. It's a tool in your toolkit to analyze. But when I look at the two of them, and I look at Football Outsiders, I look at Pro Football Focus, my eyes are telling me that Chris Clark's getting his butt kicked on every speed rush he's faced. That Eric Newton, every once in a while, he's gone back to wearing roller skates on the field, which I thought were illegal in football, but maybe that's just me. Greg Mannix is a nightmare. So Fila's been terrible. And Jeff Allen is a disaster replacing Brandon Brooks. I think it goes back to Osweiler is not getting the time he needs to do what he does best, which is throw the deeper ball. And Lamar Miller is not finding any holes. But I think we can also take it one step farther, and I'm going to segue this to you, is the choice of types of runs they're doing and staying and so focused on staying within the tackles and not using Lamar Miller's outside burst and speed bothers the heck out of me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm seeing that. I mean, like, the majority of his runs are coming in between the tackles. I know heading into last week, it was 73% of his runs in between the tackles. And I think the majority of the NFL is kind of like that, where they're just running in, over the ball between, you know, middle and center. And I think it's kind of like the deep ball, where I think there's a big inefficiency there for teams to be able to run outside the tackles more. I know the Titans are probably the best team as far as diversifying their run game, where they're running it in every direction. They're running outside a lot more often. And if you look at the numbers, teams are running for a lot more on the outside. And I don't necessarily think that's just a small sample size. I think it's because you're getting your running backs in space and they're going against one defender instead of, you know, three or four in the center. And so Miller, I mean, his two best runs came on the outside in this game. He actually broke a tackle. I couldn't believe it. On that one, he bounced outside where he ducked underneath the linebacker and ran for a few more. And in the run game, I'm seeing a lot of, you know, kind of inside zone. And I think, I mean, I really like Lamar Miller more in outside zone plays where he can get outside the tackles. He's a guy who has really great vision. He has a really great cut, too, as well. And instead, he's just doing that alpha blue north-south plotting, taking the very little bit the offensive line can give him, not very much more. And I think a lot of that just has to do with the type of running plays they're running as well. And so I don't know how much of it's the offensive line. And O'Brien doesn't think this offensive line can run the outside zone. Maybe he thinks, you know, Jeff Allen's too slow. Greg Mannix is, you know, having hard enough of a time. See what feels quick enough to run it, even if he isn't that great. And then, you know, Chris Clark isn't that strong, but Dwayne Brown's not a great run blocker anyways. So I don't really know what the disconnect there, but I know that the again, like strong in the slot, like using different formations as far as the wide receiver sets go, running more outside zone. These are opportunities there for the offense to get better. And they need to do something different because right now they're 32nd DVOA through these first four games. And they also played two bad defenses against the Titans and the Bears as well.
Yeah, and I think the most disturbing thing as I was prepping for tonight was that Lamar Miller is considered the second worst running back by Football Outsiders. You know, he should not be anywhere. It was Charles Sims, who we know is a real running back who likes to run up on the. Yeah, and he also has had a tendency throughout his entire career to run to the backs of his blockers. So, I mean, that's shocking that Lamar Miller is showing up that poor. We are, but overall our offense is ranked worst by DVOA. So there's a lot of issues here. And I think if we go back, and we're going to talk about one of the biggest issues here in a moment, but I'm going to go back to where I'm preaching again, is that you win games in the trenches, especially offensively. You have to keep your quarterback clean, and you have to keep your running back clean and block at the second level. And we're not doing either of those things well right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back to Osweiler, and the Texans are playing a really bad tight secondary. Again, this is a secondary composed of guys like, you know, Jason McCourty, Denora Searcy, Bryce McCain, Parrish Cox, Rashad Johnson, who actually played really well. He's been a really great, like, bargain to find. And, you know, he's kind of like the Glover Quinn – I mean, not the Glover Quinn, the Quinn Dempster safety, but he's been really good in Tennessee this year. And yeah, I thought he was a great kind of find coming out of Arizona, and he played real well there too. But the majority of the talent in the secondary is not there. It's a bad secondary. And in this game, Brock Osweiler, again, like, he played really well in the first quarter, and he had issues every single point then. He's been very inconsistent. And so of all of his kind of flaws that we've seen, what's been the biggest flaw that that is kind of derailing his performance so far?
Yes, and I'll just be blunt. I can't tell you how disappointed I was in Sunday's performance by Brock. I thought that was a ridiculously poor performance against an absolutely atrocious secondary. I mean, Bryce McCain, Paris Cox has been the worst quarterback in the NFL this year. This is a horrible defensive secondary team. And you kind of look at Brock's numbers, like, oh, he had completed 68% of his passes. But then you look, 6.9 yards per attempt, a couple of picks, QB rating of 82.5. Now, we're not gonna see much worse than Chicago and the Flaming Thumbtacks this year as far as secondaries. We're just not going to see much worse. And that, to me, is just kind of like, okay, we're not going to see much worse. And what's going to happen when we really start playing some quality teams like, say, the Minnesota Vikings this week? So, to me, it's worrisome.
Yeah. And, I mean, right now, Osweiler is 30th in DVOA, 30th in DYAR. And I know he's ahead of, I think, like, Ryan Tannehill, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Blaine Gabbert, and that's it. And he's worse than, you know, Case Keenum has been so far this year. And when it comes to Osweiler and me, I think his biggest problem really has been his ball placement. And you're seeing that a lot, especially with interceptions to DeAndre Hopkins, and even a lot of his completions too, where he's just not putting the ball in the correct spot. And you see these out routes where he's throwing it behind the receiver, which is giving the cornerback a chance to make a play on it even after he's been beat. You're seeing this on, you know, these throws in the flat where he's not leading the tight ends very well, not giving him the chance to make a clean catch and run with the ball. And so I think that's really big. And then the other, I think kind of, I know he doesn't look at, he looks worse in the pocket than he really is. Like, he looks a lot more frantic, but I think he's underneath control. But I think his size really kind of hampers him too at being 6'8", where it takes him a while to reset his feet and then get into his throwing motion, be able to throw, you know, correctly when there's any sort of pressure. And so the offensive line, having, you know, struggling a little bit last week against, you know, Brian Racco is a very good pass rusher. Derek Moore is pretty good. Whenever he has that pass rusher, it's hard for him to reset his feet, reset his arm, and then throw the ball because he also has kind of a longer release as well. And, you know, that's been an issue as well too. And whenever there's pressure, he's, you know, missing a lot of passes as well. And so, yeah, I don't think it's necessarily the accuracy. I think ball placement is much more important than accuracy and where you're seeing the ball. I think that, how he's been looking in the pocket, has been kind of the two biggest, like, struggles I've seen for him so far this year.
Yeah, and when you look at the accuracy issues, I see two things that really jump out at me. Number one is the pushing the ball rather than coming down, rather than more of a tall and fall motion. When you're 6'8", you should be tall and fall should be your middle name. As an NFL quarterback, he does not get the ball over his shoulder well at all. Number two, he aims the ball. He reminds me, for years and years and years and years, I coached little leaguers. I had one actually go to the major leagues. There's a picture of him showing the circle change I taught him how to throw, which was really neat because I taught him how to throw that circle change. And there was a picture of him as the Seattle Mariner throwing the circle change. Anyway, yes, I'm bragging. So anyway, but he looks like an 11, 12-year-old kid at times where he just kind of shortens his entire arm motion, just really just aims the ball. It's really weird to see that from an NFL quarterback because in all of the football watching I've seen, I've only seen like a couple throws here and there, but he does this consistently. And so his pick, I think his first two picks were aims, and I think the one that should have been picked off, no, the Marcus Peters pick, the second one was an aim. And the pick to, not to Parrish Cox, the other one, to McCourty, looked like an aim to me. It's really weird. He's not putting anything on the ball. He's just trying to get the ball to a point without any heat on it. It really icks me out. I don't know how else to put it. He looks like an 11-year-old kid who's just learning how to throw the ball.
Mm. And he also has a really good arm, too. Like, he can really zip the ball. He can throw the ball far down the field with accuracy. And so it's kind of weird that he's kind of trying to put a lot more control and force it. And you want to take stuff off, especially if you're throwing it's like the flat over an outside linebacker and, you know, that sort of thing, but not necessarily whenever you're throwing like a 12-yard out. And so, like, I'm on the train that I don't think inexperience can be used as an excuse all for his play. You know, this is his fifth year in the league. He's 25 years old. This is his second contract. He spent 4 years in Denver, you know, backing up, going through training camps, sitting through film sessions. He started 7 games last year. He started 4 games this year. And, you know, going back to last year, he was about as good as Brian Hoyer, according to DVOA and DYAR. And also just the basic numbers, too, as well. When you look at completion percentage, you know, quarterback rating, and those sorts of things. He was sandwiched in between Hoyer and Teddy Bridgewater. And this year he's down in the, you know, very basement of the league. And so I don't know, like, how much longer are you going to wait until you're worried about Osweiler? I know man, I'm blanking on his name now. I know one of the commenters, and I'm pretty sure it's Professor whatever it is. My brain stopped working for a second.
Professor Tex.
He said, yeah, Professor Tex. He said wait until after the bye week, after they play, you know, Minnesota and Denver and Detroit. But I guess I'm asking you, like, how much longer are you going to, you know, kind of accept this sort of struggling, you know, inaccurate, inconsistent, your performance from him?
Well, I mean, I'll just put it this way, just being blunt, is in the first couple of games, he was elite. It was drop dimes on Will Fuller going deep. He was able to burst some nice saves. Those balls, those passes, those routes have been taken away from him. And so what I haven't seen is anything to get excited about in the short and midterm game. It's when you take away what has been his best weapon, and he is struggling with his accuracy, struggling with ball placement. You know, you look at the numbers, and, you know, we can pick apart the numbers all we want, but you know, he's amongst the worst in the league in yards per attempt. He's amongst the worst in the league in completion percentage. He's tied for third for the most interceptions. A lot of this has happened after the first two games. So I am already looking at this guy going, wow, will you still have an issue at quarterback? And I don't know. He needs to either turn a corner or something. But the biggest problem I've got with it is his mechanics still suck. They're still problematic. And he got away with stuff as a Denver Bronco he's not getting away with now. And he got away with stuff in the first two games he can't get away with now. So you cut his hair, and he's all of a sudden he is a below average quarterback. Right now he is Case Keenum, and I say this on our listserv all the time. Brock Osweiler is a taller Case Keenum who doesn't shard himself in the face of pressure.
Yeah, and I mean, I also kind of wonder how much of his, like, we're talking about his problems throwing the ball short and staying with the deep game, and I think that's also supplemented by the issues in the run game with them just only able to get, you know, 3.7 yards a carry with them not being very sick. And it's not even getting 3.8 yards a carry because some of those numbers are inflated by running the ball in third and 15. But just the lack of success that's been there, as you see by, you know, Lamar Miller's DVOA. And so I think that's part of the problem, too, as well, is that the run game isn't there. So now the Sixers are playing back deep. And what he's best at doing, he's not able to do it all right now at the moment. And so, I mean, for me, like I said, I go back to, he's 25. This is his 11th start. You know, he's been in the league for – this is his fifth year in the league. He's not a rookie quarterback, you know. He's been here for a while. And so I think that was kind of the problem I had about so far this play is that the Texans went all in on him for the next 2 years. They tied, you know, J.J. Watt's prime, the end of Jonathan Joseph's career, you know, some maybe one or two more good years left of Brian Cushing, same with Kareem Jackson, the last contract that DeAndre Hopkins is going to have as well entering this year. And they tied that to Osweiler, and so far it hasn't, you know, been that great. And the whole idea of going and getting him rather than doing something like trading up in the first round or taking a quarterback in the first round 2 years ago is that you're going to get a guy who can perform right away, who can get you over the next hump, who can, you know, be that guy and be good immediately. And he hasn't done that yet. And again, this is coming off a game against the Titans where the Titans aren't a good pass defense in the secondary. He's played the Bears, he's played the Chiefs and the Patriots. And, you know, he just hasn't showed it yet. And the other really kind of weird thing about Osweiler, too, is that he cannot complete a pass to DeAndre Hopkins at all. T.J. Yates could do it last year. Case Keenum could do it. Brandon Whedon could do it. Brian Hoyer could do it. Ryan Mallett could do it. But just Osweiler can't. And so through his first four games, he's completed only 17 of his 33 attempts to Hopkins for 227 yards, two touchdowns. That's a catch rate of 51.5%. In this game, his first catch didn't come until the fourth quarter, which I love whenever Hopkins caught that, like, six-yard pass and he kissed the football because he just forgot what it, you know, feels like to hold it in his hands. And then also five of his six interceptions have come on targets to DeAndre Hopkins. So what do you think is going on here with this?
That is going to be the craziest thing that I'm seeing right now. And I think it goes back to when you see those passes to Hopkins, it really looked like he's trying to aim. And he's the one who's doing it the most. And it's ultimate in forcing the ball. So if you want to be optimistic about Osweiler and his future, there are two things to be optimistic about. Number one, the offensive line with the Sox, which is hurting run game, hurting the protection game. And number two is that Brock seems to have the heebie-jeebies about throwing to DeAndre Hopkins, which is, like, funky, you know? Like, just throw the ball out to the dude. Look, Brian Hoyer, with his inability to get the ball within, you know, 12 feet of DeAndre Hopkins, did not stop DeAndre Hopkins from catching 100 balls last year, right? So just get the ball to him. Just throw it hard. Don't aim it. Throw it hard. And let DeAndre do his magic. And so it's, you know, doing those things has to help. It really has to help, for Christ's sake, because this is one of the best wide receivers. When he catches balls, he's putting on display. So just give him a chance to catch the ball and stop throwing it to the down defensive back because you're taking something off of it. And Rand.
Yeah, and I mean, especially that throw at Parrish Cox where he kind of has a step on him and he kind of loops it up to him and throws it two yards short on that one.
Yep.
And also, Hopkins has saved the interceptions that were going to be interceptions just with his hand strength alone. And so, I mean, it does seem like these are bad decisions that he's making in restoring it to Hopkins. And I wonder how much of it, too, is you know, maybe Hopkins will be better off playing on his own the right side, trying him as many one-versus-one matchups as possible. And so going back to Osweiler's interceptions, we have a question from Los Texans. And he says, from what you've seen with Osweiler's interceptions, three or four games, is this a result of something easily fixable, or is this indicative of a bigger issue that should have worried us, that should have us worried for the long term?
I am worried for the long term. I was worried in the long term when we signed him because he did not have this – it wasn't a track record of not being successful, but he was no Carson Wentz either, right? So you had a guy who was a second-round pick who, you know, people love his arm strength. But he sat – I mean, look, this is a big deal, and I'm going to hit this before. He sat on his ass behind Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning is a selfish POS. He really is. He refused to give up practice snaps to Brock. That is a big deal. So Brock was – with his practice snaps, he's getting second-team reps all the time. He's not getting first-team reps. And I'll be damned that Peyton didn't take his second-team reps when he wanted to. So you have a guy who kind of molded – on the Broncos bench over the course of a couple of years. And that hurts. It really hurts your performance. He had a great game against New England, but if you look at some of his other games, he was pretty crappy. So there is a lot of reason to actually be concerned and why we can't, you know, people get so upset or upset about it for comparing him to Brian Hoyer, but that's what his numbers were. They were Brian Hoyer numbers. So he needed to take a step up in a new offense, but he's learning a new offense. But yes, I'm concerned for the reasons that I've really ranted upon tonight. But, you know, if you're being really intellectually honest with yourself, if you thought he was going to be good going into the season, you probably still think he's going to be good. If you think he's not going to be good going into the season, you have an argument to make there because what he hasn't done is he hasn't really changed mind either way yet. There's cause for concern, but there's cause for optimism.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of just been lukewarm bathwater so far as, like, trying to understand what you have with Osweiler. I mean, the one thing I have to say about it is that it has only been four games so far. The season's still early. And when you have this many new parts together on the offense, it's going to take some time. You know, the offensive line has, you know, three different starters on it. Will Fuller's new. Braxton Miller's new. Jalen Strong didn't play it all last year. You know, Cecil Shorts is gone. Nate Washington's gone. Hopkins is still here. They add Steven Anderson to the tight ends. You know, Osweiler's brand new. Lamar Miller's brand new. And so it's an offense, you know, it takes a lot of repetition for them to start to gel together. Also, there's no more two-days anymore, and that's where you get a lot of your repetitions in. So it's going to take some time for this many different new pieces to come together. It's not like New England just adding Martellus Bennett and keeping the same players other than that. This is an offense with, you know, six or seven different starters. And so that's going to take some time. So that's the one, like, source of optimism I have is that, yeah, it's been really bad through 4 weeks. They have the worst offense in the NFL so far. But it's been 4 weeks with all these different new parts, and it's going to take some growing pains. And that's the one little bit, you know, cheerfulness I have. And I guess also going back to kind of like how negative we've been on the offense this game, it's because the offense has been bad. And, yeah, the team's been 3-1. You know, we get that. That's very good. I thought they were going to be 2-2 at this point, but they're 3-1. And the thing is, though, is that they haven't won their games by playing well. Their defense has carried them. They played, you know, against some bad teams. They had they recovered a bunch of fumbles against Kansas City. You know, those sorts of things happen to lead to them being 3-1. And so in the NFL, there's a difference between, you know, playing really well and winning games, because we've seen how small the difference can be between wins and losses. And, like, the Cleveland Browns are a great example for that. The Baltimore Ravens at 3-1 are a great example of that. The Chargers are a great example of that, how they're 1-3. The Colts are a great example of them being 1-3. So it's not necessarily that you're 3-1. It's how you play, and so far they haven't played well.
Yeah, it reminds me of the 1983 White Sox, and I'm sure everybody that's listening is going to get that reference. But their motto during that season was winning ugly. And so, you know, they every game, you know, win would end with na-na-na-na, na-na-na-na, hey-hey-hey, goodbye. And it was a winning ugly season, and they won very ugly that year. And winning is a lot better than losing.
Yeah.
That's what creates team chemistry.
Yeah, and I mean, right now their playoff odds are at 45%. It increased 8% for this game, especially with everybody else in the AFC South being 1-3. And so somebody's going to have to make the playoffs out of this division. And just like last year, the Texans so far have been, you know, the best team in a bad division. But the division's been more fun this year. I will say that. It's been more fun than it has in years prior. So let's be happy. How much do you love Will Fuller right now?
I tell you what, that screen pass that he caught, that acceleration out of it, is sick. I mean, that's just freaking sick. NFL player is not supposed to do that to every other player on the field, to have that sort of acceleration and get out of there. That was amazing, truly amazing. He still catches ugly. He has a lot of work to do. I would like to talk about one play, though. I wish I could remember the details of the play. There was the best play he had all game, though, was a run block that he was able to keep his block on a run play that went outside the tackle. And I thought that he was going up against a bigger guy. I think it was McCourty going up against a bigger guy. And he was able to hold his own at the point of block and allow Lamar Miller to get to the outside. That was the best play of his game, I think. As fun as the screen pass was, as fun as the other catches were, the dude was putting in the work on blocking. Always why I loved Andre Johnson so much is because the dude put in the work on the little things, and that's what Will Fuller's doing. Gotta love it.
Yeah, and Fuller was a very good blocker, Notre Dame, too. And it really surprised me how good he was at that part of the game, especially considering his size. And, you know, heading into this year, like, I thought the gap between his speed in the college and the pros was going to be a lot smaller. And so far, it really hasn't. He's a kind of like a one-in-a-kind, like, one-in-the-league sort of player. I mean, just, like, how fast he accelerates, how quick and how incredible, like, his top speed is. Like, I don't know. I really can't name him a player in the NFL I've seen that's been faster than he is so far this year. Other than, like, Travis Benjamin, he's a much better route runner than Benjamin is. And so, I mean, he's been, you know, really, really special this year. And so I have a trivia question for you. So when was the last time the Texans had a special team touchdown?
God. I think it was around 1897. I don't know. It has to have been a Jacoby Jones touchdown, punt return for a touchdown in, say, 2010.
Man, that was really close. It was Jacoby Jones in Oakland with Shane Leckler punting with the candlestick in 2009, and it was a 95-yard punt return.
I can not remember if that was 2009, 2010. Okay, awesome. I was close because I'm awesome.
Yeah, that was very good. That was much better than I could, man. I was looking at it today, and I forgot how good a punt returner Andre Davis was, and part of the reason why was because I was, you know, fat, stupid, lazy 17-year-old. But he had, like, three in 2007, and he was, you know, which really kind of surprised me as well, too.
Yeah, back then we were calling him Dre and not Andre Johnson.
Hmm. Yeah, that was before I could read him right. But offensively, is there anything else that you want to add at all?
Yeah, I just want to go back to Will Fuller real fast because you asked about, you know, who does he remind you of? He reminds me of Deshaun Jackson. I cannot say those two words at one time, but used more appropriately. So if there's one, you know, I very freely admit I've got a lot of problems with Bill O'Brien, his offensive scheme, the play calling. I'm more than, you know, I'm happy to talk about that. The personnel, so that's better, much better. But what O'Brien has done with Will Fuller is really used him and put him in situations to succeed. And so, you know, just Jackson, I'm not going to try to say the word. Why can't I speak all of a sudden? Jackson has never been used appropriately as an NFL wide receiver. We are already using Will Fuller appropriate as an NFL wide receiver. And so I think if you're going to point to a guy and say that's who he is like, but Jackson never got those other chances. So you got to love the usage on him.
Yeah, and that's a much better comparison than the Ted Ginn one is. The Ted Ginn comparison is, you know, lazy and not true because he's a much better route runner and a much better overall football player. You know, I mean, the catch problems are – he still doesn't catch the ball well, but, again, like his amount of space he's able to create has been so remarkable that he's been able to get away with it too as well.
Yeah.
So, defensively, this was the first Texans game without J.J. Watt since 2011 when J.J. Watt was drafted. We've gone 5 years and, you know, four games. We finally had to see what this defense looked like without him. And so Christian Covington was the one who played the bulk of the snaps, not Devin Still. And this one also, Cushing came back. They gave up 20 points. They gave 124 rushing yards and 32 carries and 2 touchdowns. And Marcus Mariota completed just 13 of his 29 passes for 202 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. He's just sacked once. And so who did you watch on the field while J.J. Watt was gone?
Covington. Covington was really the guy I was keeping an eye on. To a lesser extent, Clowney. But Covington, I wanted to watch every freaking snap he took. I wanted to see how active he was. He wasn't bad. He's not J.J. Watt. I like the fact that we kicked in Clowney inside on the 3-4 base scheme. I think he just needs to learn a little bit more technique there, but I do think he could be very disruptive in that. It's not necessarily taking advantage of his skill set, but the issue is when you start saying a guy's a 4-3 defensive end or he's a 3-4 outside linebacker, that the offensive scheme is also scheming that he's going to be an average type, you know, 3-4 outside linebacker. So when you take a guy with linebacker skills like Clowney and you stick him inside and let him use his first step quickness to overwhelm guards and centers, then I think you can do some damage there. So I'm really excited about that. Covington was the guy I watched. He was okay. Clearly, though, I mean, again, losing Watt is huge, you know, huge with huge hands. So it sucks. And I just want to talk about also, and I'll turn it over to you, but exotic Smash Mouth is still the stupidest thing I've seen. It was stupid all game. Marcus Mariota is the best offensive player out there for the BSF. It's not close. He completed 13 of 29 passes. You want to talk about not putting your quarterback in a situation to succeed? Mike Mularkey is easily the worst head coach in the NFL today, and it's not close. I mean, it's like the dude shouldn't be coaching high school football. He may be defensive coordinator in Pee Wee League. That's what I give him, Max.
Yeah. I mean, going to the tight ends, I agree with you. I think that's kind of the problem with the exotic Smash Mouth thing is that you're limiting, you know, this guy who can be like a Pro Bowl quarterback. You're limiting his development in a lot of ways by kind of the way their passing game works. But I think the bigger problem now is it really isn't the scheme. I think it's the receiving talent. And again, we talked about last week where Andre Johnson's getting 7 targets and, man, I mean, the poor guy can barely even move anymore. He's just like an old dog. He's like Candy's dog in Mice and Men. You know, he's just old and crusty. He stinks bad. And it's just so sad watching play. You know, Delanie Walker, I think, only caught 9 of his – he only caught 2 of his 9 targets, and Bouye did a really good job covering him. Rashard Matthews hasn't been very good. Tajay Sharpe is their number one wide receiver. He's a fifth-round pick. DeMarco Murray is their best receiver, and that's their running back. And so I just don't think they have the horses, they don't have the wide receivers to help Mariota to run this quick passing offense where you got to get open immediately, and they don't have the receivers that can do that. And so I think whenever you – especially watch the film too, like they're just not getting open very well. And Mariota is missing guys here and there, but I think a lot of it too is just it's quick passing, make it predetermined read, throw it there, but the guys just aren't open. And then that's kind of like the big problem I've seen for their offense. I mean, I think the team kind of works just in the run game. I really like how they run the ball so many different spots. Their offensive line's been blocking a lot better. But, again, I just don't think they have the receivers to make the same work. And so maybe this year in the offseason they can get some receivers, they can draft one high, and they'll have some success with it if, you know, Mularkey stays for another year. But right now they just don't have the receiving talent for this thing to, you know, work whatsoever. And I know for me watching the Texans play this week, I watched Clowney a lot, but, like, I found myself following the ball a lot more than I usually do when the Texans are on defense. And, again, that's just because, like, Watt's not there, so I didn't really know what to do. And it was very sad. It was really a sad day. We laying on the couch, you know, hungover, and just not knowing what to do at all with it. I was just like a dog following the laser around.
That might be the best analogy ever on this show. I just want to say, and here's the thing. They had a chance to have a guy who could make a difference as a wide receiver, and they cut him. Jordan Green Beckham should be on that team, and they cut him because reasons. So once again, we go back to Mike Mularkey and the combining the scheme with the personnel decision, and that is just the stupid Burns. And there's no nice way to put it. There really isn't.
Yeah, I can get
that. Did you fart in the mic?
No. So I guess here at the time, going back to the times also, is that their run game was the same. Their game plan the same as usual. They ran the ball a lot. They ran the ball to a lot of different spots. And they had a lot of success in Murray. And Murray's been awesome this year. And, you know, Derek Cameron only had three tackles. They were off the middle. And so did you see any holes on this defense with Watt gone?
What I saw was less pressure. Mariota did a good job escaping pressure, but what we didn't have was we didn't have interior pressure yet. That has to have been, and I don't think it's very close either, that has to have been Vince Wolfsburg's best game as a Houston Texan. I haven't seen that dude that active since the all-you-can-eat buffet at a barbecue joint in Houston. He was all over the place. He's a freaking nose tackle. He was all over the place on Sunday, and that was wonderful to see. He was doing a great job stopping up the middle. He was creating something resembling a pass rush. When we signed him 20 months ago or whatever it was, this is what I hoped to see. He was outstanding this game. That said, you know, you're still missing a huge piece of your pass rush when you take J.J. Watt off the field, and I think it showed.
Yeah, I agree too. And that was the biggest issue I saw, was just the pass rush too. They had one sack, and it was by Clowney. And the sack came whenever Quinn Spain had Clowney locked up, and they were using Clowney as a three technique rusher.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what Watt does, except Ben Jones went to help out, and he shoved Clowney off of Quinn Spain's block, which led to that sack that Clowney had. And it wasn't really him making a great move. And I know Clowney hasn't really faced a lot of guards at all, but the difference between guard and tackle is that the space isn't available at all for you. So you're going to have to make your move to get past the guard in two or three steps. You don't have five steps to set it up. You can't run around the edge. You're going to have to take one step and jab and try to go around. You're going to have to use spins. You're going to have to bull rush. And so it's a whole different way to pass. And I guess it's also kind of you don't realize how great Watt was to be able to rush from defensive end just as well as you rush from defensive tackle. And, it's just incredible just how good he was at everything. You know, I don't want to sound like an obituary, but it's just such a big difference between the two. And, I mean, like the pass rush wasn't there. You know, the stunts up the middle didn't work as well. Merciless didn't really do anything. John Simon didn't have anything. And I thought that whole idea that the Texans know somewhat of an idea what their defense was like without Watt after these first three games because he was fully healthy, I thought that was some of the dumbest things I've ever heard. Just because offenses still had a scheme for it. They still had moved their pass protections based on Watt. They still had to look for him and how to do the run blocking about where he was so they could make sure that they double teamed him, or you'd chip on the backside blocks. And so with Watt in there, even at 65%, they still had a game plan for him, and it still opened up things for other players. And without him there, they're not having to do that. You know, they can one versus one block against a lot of these guys, and just the pass rush wasn't there as a result of it.
Yeah, I don't have really anything to add to that. But
okay.
You're right.
Yeah, and I guess I was going to ask you if you saw Clowney line up, you know, where he lined up, and I think we kind of touched on that too, where he lined up as a three technique. He lined up at defensive end. I didn't see him line up at outside linebacker at all. Did you?
I don't think I did. I think they stuck with Simon and Merciless the entire game. I am questioning that response, and I would like to verify that, but I'm pretty sure he lined up defensive end the entire game. If anybody out there that's listening, please point out if you saw something different. I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, I know Merciless played 100% of the snaps also, but defensively they held the Titans to 20 points. Everything came on the run game pretty much for them. Again, Mariota completed just 13 passes. And so the key to this defense was the secondary. A.J. Bouye had a great game covering Delanie Walker. Jonathan Joseph was great. Jackson, lost the ball in that deep pass to Rashard Matthews. Kevin Johnson, had a really good game too. And they were all awesome against probably the worst collection of pass collectors in the NFL. And the pass game had really nothing at all except for that one deep pass to Rashard Matthews. And so without Watt, do you agree that the strength of this defense is in the secondary?
I mean, the strength of this defense is in the cornerbacks. I think it's in Jonathan Joseph, Kareem Jackson, Kevin Johnson, and A.J. Bouye, who has been balling. I mean, gee, wow. A.J. Bouye has been balling. So that's, I think, is the strength of the team right now. Kareem's been burned deep. Okay, we've come to expect that over the years. He does great things inside. He is the best run tackling quarterback in the league, and those are things those have value, but I do think as a group that really is our strength right now. I think that's it's a wonderful group to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really enjoy how well they all break on the ball too, and Bouye really didn't show that, but just like when the ball is in the air, he's shown really great ball skills, just his ability to find the ball and slide down. And the secondary's been really remarkable so far this year. And they're going to be pressed and have to work a lot harder without Watt there to kind of lose that pass rush too. But they hold up. It's going to soften the blow a lot more. So defensively, did you see anything else from this game at all?
What I saw was that we weren't getting to Mariota like we should have. You got to say, I think we got one sack on the game. You got to say that the BSS offensive line has definitely gotten better, which is sad. And the other sad thing is that JJ normally owns that line no matter who we're playing, or who he's facing. But those were Merciless wasn't as good in space. Simon wasn't as good. Clowney was decent. We really need to see somebody else step up. And we have Merciless, Clowney, and Simon's been doing a great job getting to the quarterback. Bernard McKinney has been a beast this year. Cushing hasn't been a good blitzer in several years. So what I would like to see is I'd like to see some more of those eight-gap stunts that we've been using with our inside linebackers or an inside linebacker and somebody playing the defensive tackle, under tackle position or in our sub-scheme. I would like to see a lot more of that. I'd like to see Bernard McKinney be able to hit that gap downhill more consistently on a game-to-game basis from a scheme perspective, not from a can-he-do-it perspective, but set him up for success and let him get to that A-gap in the quarterback space. It's inside rush we need to refocus on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think probably have to start blitzing more, too. They have been also about Watt. And Cronella has done some kind of cool stuff. The twists in the center are really great. I know he does that. He runs TE stunts a lot are the two big things. But it'd be neat to see maybe like a zone blitz, maybe see Kareem Jackson blitz from the slot. Something like that would be cool to see too. But the options are there. They have horses to manufacture a pass rush. You know, there's opportunities there. And it's like we talked about the offense, too, where, you know, it's not necessarily that it's not like a talent issue. There's opportunities there for them to exploit defenses. And so that just hasn't happened yet. And the defense is there where they've played well so far, but we're talking about trying to create passers through blitzing. And they have, you know, personnel who can do that. Before we move on, we have two times-related questions. The first is Upper Root Texan. He was wondering if any of us can explain what the hell happened in the last 15 seconds of the first half. You know, whenever I watched it, I thought Bill O'Brien was just being an idiot, you know? They were standing around. Nobody knew really what was going on. They didn't know if they were going to measure or not. I thought he just assumed they were going to measure and was just hanging out waiting for that to happen, only for it to never happen. And then by the time he realized it, they sent out the field goal team too late. And I know he said something contradictory in the press conference where the referee told him that they weren't going to start the clock until later because they had some sort of mix-up or whatever, and they did. And then, you know, he made it seem like it wasn't really his issue. But that is somewhat a stranger, you know, ends of the first half I've seen. Did you see something similar too?
I think my comment in the air of the dog thread was something along the lines of, I can't decide between if we want to be relevant or completely incompetent. And I stick by that statement. If that's, you know, we joked for years that we just need to go get Gary Kubiak a copy of Madden 2005 so that he can learn clock management. And we've seen repeatedly this sort of really, really poor clock management from Bill O'Brien. I just think that Sunday just happens to be kind of peak incompetence for that clock management aspect.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's one of those things where we don't know what the truth is at all, but watching it live, it just seemed like incompetence on his part. And he's done before, too. You know, he's kicked field goals when he shouldn't. He hasn't gone for any shit at times, and he's had, you know, issues with him just, you know, managing those sorts of situations. The other question we had is from, I think it's Indecision, and he said, why are Titans fans, and especially at Titans, so resistant to embracing the hashtag tits up as our new and infinitely more applicable team slogan / hashtag?
The only problem I've really had with that as a team motto is I like boobs, and I hate to speak illy of them, and I would prefer to come up with a different term. But that's just me. I mean, that's just me. You know, just saying.
I think tying up is funny enough as it is because it means absolutely nothing. And you're trying for it to mean something, but it means zero. And like we talked about before, I think it's just kind of like sort of like, you know, sack up or, you know, man up, and they're just replacing that with Titan. And nobody knows what it means or anything like that. You know that nobody ever says that in the crowd. You know the players aren't, you know, I changed my mind. Mike Mularkey is definitely telling his players pregame they need to tie it up and, you know, come out and win this one. He's definitely using that as motivation tactics.
God, he's terrible. He's so bad.
Yeah, I do kind of like the exotic smash stuff. I'm not going to lie. Again, I think the receiving talent is the biggest problem. And if they get receivers, it may work. It may work. Because we've seen rush-heavy attacks work like Dallas is doing, like what San Francisco is doing. But it may just be a worse version because their offensive line is not nearly as good as San Francisco had in 2011 and what the Cowboys have now. But I think that right now the receiving talent is the biggest issue they have.
Look, the biggest issue they have is Mike Mularkey is going to keep doing what's made him successful and has given him a 1-50 record as a head coach in the NFL.
Yeah, but hey, he was the offensive coordinator for the Steelers in 2003 or something, too. Don't forget about that. Did you watch the morning between the Jags and Colts at all?
I missed most of it. So my Sunday mornings are devoted to going to the grocery store and cooking a lot. So I missed that game, unfortunately.
Yeah, I woke up and put it on and fell asleep off and on and watched the fourth quarter with one eye open. And then I went back and watched the condensed version. And from what I saw, the Colts aren't winning those games that they need to win. You know, their defense isn't good. Andrew Luck's going to have to try to eke out a lot of wins. And right now they're 1-3 in one possession games. And those are the type of games that the Colts have to win to make the playoffs. And they haven't done that so far. And that luck may change. They may start winning these horseshoe games later on in the year. But they have to win the one possession games if they're going to have any they're ever going to get into this playoff race at all. And the Jags defense is really good, and they've been good this year. I think Jalen Ramsey's awesome. Their pass rush has been better. That Ngakoue guy is just so stretchy. He has really long arms. Malik Jackson's done a very good job in the run game. You know, Talvin Smith is a really good rangy linebacker. Their secondary has really improved too. And their biggest issue has been offensively. And Bortles only made like one really bad Bortles throw in this game, and it was drop point interception. But throughout this one, though, he didn't Bortles really at all. And he's been the biggest problem for this offense is because they can't run block whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really up to Bortles just not being an idiot and hitting Allen Robinson deep and, you know, hitting Allen Hurns for first downs. And if he can do that, the Jaguars maybe come good. But right now, they're not. They're going to go as far as Bortles is going to take them.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the one thing to watch, you know, they have not – the offense especially is not kind of played up to the expectations that I had of the Jags offense. And yeah, we have to put that on Bortles, who has been pretty much Osweiler's equal from a staff perspective this year. I mean, if you look at their numbers, they are scary similar. Pardon me.
Mm-hmm.
But that defense is a lot of fun to watch. It really is. Between Jalen Ramsey and Miles Jack and Calvin Smith, that is a crazy amount of speed from positions that don't see that sort of crazy amount of speed. How they evolve, if they're able to take that, put them in a situation that really takes advantage of those skill sets, that is going to be a crazy good defense because they're going to have three core guys who can do a lot of damage to you as a team just from a speed perspective. You talk about the exotic smash mouth. You know, the Jags are playing the anti-exotic smash mouth. They're playing to win with speed and getting to the ball before you can, and they're playing with smaller guys. So that's going to be really interesting to see games like when the BSFs play the Jaguars. I don't know if I can remember if they have or not. Wow. It's been a long October already, or a long fall. But it's going to be interesting to see how the speed comes down against the brute force strength.
Yeah, you're probably the first person in America who said that so far this year. They're really excited for the Jaguars Titans. I know I love those games just because I've watched the AFC South for, you know, so long now, especially since I started getting NFL Game Pass and just went back and watching these games. And I really love at the 3-10 Titans against the 3-10 Jaguars games. They're just hysterical. And both of the games they played against each other last year were just entertaining and terrible. And it was like watching, you know, Pee Wee League football. But I agree with you. I think the Jags defense isn't great. It's not great, but it set them up to be competent as a
football
team. It set them up to be competent. And Blake Bortles hasn't been good enough for them to reach that level of play yet. But if he plays more like he did on Sunday and can play, you know, mistake-free football, and that the Jaguars could become good this year. And so this leads me to a question from this is a bad job on my part.
You're not being the best block mate you can be right now.
No, I had it. All right, I got it. So this leads me to this question. So
okay.
I don't know, I think it's indecision. He says, after the Texans have blown out New England, I was told they're the worst team in football, even if you include the SEC East. Now 3-1 with a 2-game winning condition. They've upgraded to Devin's side. Is it possible this team is just on the better side of average? Am I even going to play off game this year?
I think that's a fair statement. I really do. We weren't the worst team in the league after New England by any stretch of the silly imagination. We were exposed as a team, once again, that Bill O'Brien has a very, very difficult time. If somebody on the other sideline does something different, he has a very difficult time adjusting and figuring that out. We have our personnel is just too talented to be the worst team in football. And I know we're being very hyperbolic about it, and that's great. But it's also, you know, that's an honest. You're not wrong by even saying that. That people are just, you know, that, you know, like, you know, honey cutting risks and stuff like that. Anyway, I think we are an 11-12 win team. Because we're going to get a lot of help from our division, because outside of Minnesota and one other matchup, I can't remember off the top of my head, I'm very worried about. Minnesota's a very difficult matchup for us. we really kind of have an oddly easy schedule the rest of the way out. We've gotten past the Chiefs. We've gotten past the Patriots. We're going to win 11 and 12 games. What we do in the playoffs is going to be up to Brock Osweiler. I really think that this is a team that is right now beats the teams it should beat. It's going to struggle horribly to beat teams that we shouldn't beat. And it sounds quaint, right, to say something like that, but really, this is not a team I see making a deep run into the playoffs unless Brock Osweiler all of a sudden finds the football gods within them and improves greatly.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think they'll probably – well, first thing I want to say is that they play the 25th easiest schedule in the NFL so far. They're facing the 11th toughest schedule entering the rest of the time. And they have to play the Packers, Vikings, Bengals, Broncos. I thought the Lions were going to make the playoffs. And then the
Broncos.
Yeah, but I can't remember his name, their head coach. It's a lot different if you have to talk into this microphone, you forget things. But those are four, you know, really tough games if you include the Broncos, you know, and those teams. And also they play the Colts twice too, and the Colts play them tough also. So it's not a super easy schedule the rest of the way. And so I still think they win 10 games and they, you know, win the division and they probably end up losing the first round because that's just, you know, what this is pretty much like the most realistic expectations to have. And so let's move on to our game preview. They're playing on Sunday at 3 o'clock. Against the Minnesota Vikings. And so the first question here is from Texian Army 3495. He says, guess I'll just state the obvious. How can this team beat the Vikings? And his three biggest fears are, number one, Stephon Diggs. Number two, Cordarrelle Patterson, the return game. Number three, their defense.
Well, I think you named the three biggest reasons to be afraid. I mean, we could, you know, fiddle over Cordarrelle Patterson in the return game a little bit. The dude's scary. And our return game, our coverage game has not been great this year, especially. But those are three good reasons. Is Diggs can get behind our cornerbacks. They are a little bit on the slower side, aside from Kevin Johnson. But number one is really the defense. They're ranked third by DVOA right now. When you look across, I'm not sure Sharif Floyd's status for the game. If he's healthy and active for the game, that's yet another problem. Linval Joseph is a nightmare and a half.
I love him so much.
Anthony Barr, oh, he's just man crush so hard on him.
He's like the
Anthony
best.
Anthony Barr might actually. Anthony Barr is probably my favorite non-Texan player in the NFL right now. Love the dude. Love to watch him. So fast, so gifted. He's really getting it. He's really getting it as a football player at this point of his career. And we haven't even talked about, you know, they got Xavier Rhodes back this week. Trey Raines was playing good ball before that. Harrison, there's a lot of talent on the defense. And the one thing that they'll be able to do is they'll be able to shut down Fuller and Hopkins, and they'll be able to get to Brock Osweiler. And that's our game plan, right? So, it's not a great matchup.
Yeah, I talking about this game, I think this could be this could be worse than the Patriots game as far as offensively goes. You know, we saw some problems with edge rushing with Brian Racpone, Derek Morgan. The Vikings have Everson Griffin. They have Brian Robinson. They have Danielle Hunter. Those are three. I mean, other than Robinson, you know, Hunter and Griffin are better edge rushers than Racpone Morgan are. You know, Dwayne Brown's healthy. This would be a very good game for Dwayne Brown to play. On the interior, Linval Joseph's rushing the pass for a lot better this year. If Sharif Floyd is able to, that's an even bigger thing. Anthony Barr is so fast. He's a great blitzer. There's nobody that can really keep up with him. And they're not going to be able to throw the ball in the flats to the tight ends with Barr covering any of those guys. He's just too fast as well. And he's also really great at leaping on the ball. And then their other linebackers are good too. You know, Chad Greenway is like Brian Cushing, you know, like kind of an older guy, a little bit slower, but who still tackles well, understands the game. Eric Kendricks is very good too. And their safety is a lot like, you know, how the Broncos are, how the Bengals were, you know, last year and the year before, where they have, you know, Terrence Newman, Trey Wayne, Xavier Rhodes. Their safety is incredible too. And I mean, like, it's just such a deep defense. I don't know how they were 14th in DVOA last year. But this year, they really have made the leap. I just don't see, like, I don't see any holes at all for the Texans to exploit against this defense with what they have. I really think the offense is just going to be Campbell Fuller win deep maybe twice this game, because that's the only way I see them scoring at all.
Yeah, this is a sucky matchup.
it's unbelievable. I mean, I don't see them running the ball at all. Linval Joseph on the interior. I mean, even the edge rushers are great at staying there and sticking. And I just don't – like, I think the Texans could get shut out this weekend.
I don't know if they'll be shut out. But, you know, it's clearly it's a possibility. But, it's you know, it's hard to get a shutout in the NFL. But there is – the matchup is difficult at best. Danny Outlander, totally forgot about him as well, is he has been an absolute beast this year, too. It's a lot of talent. It's a lot of guys. And even if we get Dwayne Brown back, he's going to be rusty. He's not going to play a full – allotment of snaps, and Chris Clark hasn't been good this year, so it's matchup hell across the board offensively for us.
Well, how many times do you think Osweiler gets sacked in this one?
4. I'll say because they're averaging. I think they're averaging 4 a game right now. I think they've got 15 or 17 through 4 games so far. So I'm gonna go with they'll hit their average.
I'm going to go with 6. I mean, like, I really think this game is going to come down to the defenses. And for Houston to win, they're going to have to force turnovers. And, if you know, McKinnon, I think McKinnon's going to be able to run the ball pretty well against Houston. You know, with they played pretty well last week in the run game. But I think McKinnon's will have some success there. And then it's all me about the how well the secondary can cover too. You know, Stephon Diggs is a matchup issue. Cordell Patterson could possibly be. Kyle Rudolph, I think, is going to have a huge game. And so it's kind of dependent if they can force turnovers and get a short field. If they can do that, then maybe they can kind of squeak something out. But, again, like, I just don't see any really good matchups off of the offense here.
I'll disagree. AJ Bouye is taking away opposing tight ends right now, period. He's taking away guys. I never thought I'd see that day, and he has been a great matchup against opposing tight ends and coverage.
Yeah, I did kind of forget about that. But, yeah, we'll see. Are you excited to watch Cordell Patterson potentially chase down Will Fuller in special teams?
That's going to be a lot of fun. That part of the game will be a blast if Fuller is returning punts again. No, I mean, let's face it. Just the mere fact that Fuller gets a touch and Tyler Irvin can't do jack all year returning kicks is just says everything you need to know. But I wouldn't put Will Fuller out there to return punts for me. I just don't think that's a good use. I don't think that's a good risk-reward swap in that case. I'm just not a big fan of that. The Tyler Irvin is terrible.
My thing with Fuller is just his hands. I don't trust him catching punts. But I like him on kickoff returns, though. And Patterson's been a really great gunner, too. It's kind of strange how his career has evolved. He's going to be a top 10 wide receiver every year. You got to take him in fantasy every year to be a really great special teams player, kind of finding a niche, which is obviously not what you want with the number 22 pick and somebody with the physical talent that he has. But it still is always somebody finds their way in life. You know, you get lost sometimes, and Patterson's kind of found a nice little niche there. And I mean, really, the biggest thing for me in this game is just the absence of somebody. And I'm really, really, really upset we're not going to be able to watch Teddy Bridgewater play the Houston Texans in this game. Like, I've waited 3 years to watch this happen. I've waited 3 years for this game, and we're not going to be able to see it. And now we've got to wait until 2020 to watch Teddy Bridgewater play the Houston Texans, unless they play in the Super Bowl. And I'm so bummed out about it. And, you know, I'm also just so bummed I'm going to watch Bridgewater play, you know, 8 times this year, too. You know, I had that shirt that he just sits there, just sad. I'm wearing basketball now. And I really am bummed about that.
We can talk about the whole Teddy Bridgewater man crush thing for quite a while. But what's been the most shocking thing about Minnesota this year has been that Sam Bradford hasn't been completely incompetent. I think that by itself is a huge big team. It's shocking. I mean, he is terrible, and he is not really stocked. So, hey, you know, get off the fainting couch.
Yeah, and I mean, I we talked about earlier in the year how I say he was probably my least favorite player in the NFL because of how much money he's made just by being a quarterback and not doing anything. And he's been good this year. Like, he's been, you know, really pretty good. And again, with this defense for Bradford, he needs to make three throws a game. And so far, he's done exactly that. He's gone. He's even been a little bit better than that, too, as well. So, but who do you have in this game? What's your prediction?
I don't like this matchup. I've got this game going 24-10 Minnesota, and it won't be that close.
Yeah, I have Minnesota 20, Houston 6, and I think the potential could be here for a shutout, especially if the Texans don't force any turnovers, too.
Yeah. I don't like this game.
Yeah, neither do I. It's going to be fun. It's, Vikings are a lot of fun, and it's also in that, you know, dome, too. And it's going to be loud in there, which is also kind of a problem as well. So we have two kind of fun questions before we end tonight. And the first one's from Sacrifice for a Team. It says it happens to be National Taco Day. And he said, what's the strangest taco you've ever seen? And I know for me, I've talked about it before, but it's that fish burrito at Los Robertos in San Antonio. And I still have not had it yet. But it's just a burrito with, like, fish and tartar sauce. And I don't know what else, but it's definitely going to give me salmonella whenever I eat it.
I was drinking some beer, and you made me start the beer, so that's why it took me a moment to recover from that. See, in here, the place that makes smothered catfish tacos, and they are amazing. Oh, habaneros on Old Tour for any of you also nice. I think one of the funny things about my childhood growing up as a, you know, with my background being German, Czech, and Jewish, and you know, just kind of old school Texan, is that I grew up with a lot of different, and I worked in a very Hispanic part of Houston. Is I just grew up around, oh, and had a bunch of black friends, and I grew up around so many different cultures of food, British and French, and just all sorts of weird, funky things. So by the time I was, you know, there's a certain level of been there, done that with food. I had fish tacos, I'd had chocolate tacos type things. So I don't really see anything that's like totes cray-cray anymore. There are combinations I don't like, but I nothing to me, you have to go so far out there. I mean, like an insect taco or something like that would be like, you know, crazy. But, you know, when you have friends where, you know, fried chicken and waffles is like, you know, this Wednesday meal, then, you know, seeing it, that's not unusual. Oh, a waffle taco. Oh, yeah, how sweet. I've seen that. I saw that when I was 9, you know? So, I just, mm-hmm. you know, growing up in the South with that, it's kind of hard to be, you know, overly shocking with that. I would say that personally, I'm just a big fan of a very, very hot and warm and toasty flour tortilla with beef fajita and onion and guacamole and pico de gallo. And boom, I'm there. We're besties at that point, if you give me that.
But, yeah, that was cool. I'm going to have to try that catfish place next time I'm in Austin. I may go up there around Halloween. I'll have to let you know and get that information again in case I forget. And last question is from Uproot Texan. He said if you can change the presidential debates at all to make them more interesting or fun, what would you do? And I think what I would do is I would put like a taser or some type of shock collar or maybe like some gasoline on them, just something that – and then have some fact-checking there so that every time they lie, they get, you know, tased or you shocked, or every time they start evading the question, they get shocked and are forced to go back on course. And just so that way you're not sitting there listening to all this stuff incessantly that you don't know whether it's true or not and you don't have any immediate reaction unless you're on Twitter or online or something along those lines. So I think that's the best way you could do that.
I'd have to agree. What I would like to see is I would like to see more substantive debate talk. I mean, right, it's going on right now. I see that it's, you know, in the background of my computer. I'm not watching or listening or anything right now, but I see it in the background. We need to get to more substantive topics, and what that also means is that when a candidate lies, is that needs to be called out immediately, because what happens is that lie is able to go, it's able to gain its own strength, and by the next day, people have totally forgotten it's a lie. It needs to be called mm-hmm. out right then, and early and often, and I think that's a huge problem. I'd also like to say that if candidates don't respond to a policy question directly with a policy response, they should be definitely tasered for that.
Yeah, we need more violence is what we need to force these people to do the right and correct thing. And also, rags would be a lot better, too. Or, like, dump, like, pig's blood or something on them. That possibly isn't English. Just, like, I think there's a lot of different things you can do there. And lastly, the baseball playoffs to start tonight. And, of course, the Jays went first because Jose Bautista hit a home run. And now the Orioles are up 2-1 because Mark Trumbo hit a home run. And, you know, the Texas Rangers, I think, you know, two things are going to happen. They're going to beat the Cubs in the World Series, or they're going to lose 3 one-run games in a row to the Blue Jays or Orioles. And I'm just going to be just drunk and so sad and so alone, and the world to be so cold. And I'm so afraid for this week. And it's so beautiful, but it's just going to be another miserable endeavor. But I wouldn't have it any other way. And we'll see what's going to happen. But and also, I would trade every Houston Texans win for the rest of forever in exchange for a Texas Rangers World Series. I want to make that clear as well, too. So I'm excited to watch Cole Hamels and Darvish pitch games 1-2 in Houston, in Texas against whoever we get to see. So it should be a lot of fun this weekend.
Arlington Matt, Texan Ranger lover. I'm just going to say that's my entire response.
That's the beauty of being from San Antonio. You don't have to be a fan of the crappy Astros. You're neutral. And I'm also really excited to watch these games on the clock and get paid to watch the Rangers play baseball as well, too. Because they play at 3:30 on Thursday. And I hope my boss is listening, too. They play at 3:30 on Thursday, and then they play at 12:30 on Friday. So on Friday, I'm for sure.
There's nothing better.
The pants off and watching the Rangers play.
There's nothing better than being paid to sit on the can, and the only thing that comes close to it is watching sports.
Yeah, I didn't even pay $10 to get a stream of every playoff game, and so I have 2 monitors and a laptop, and I'll just put in that little laptop and watch it like that. So I'm excited for it. Yeah. I'm going to go to work tomorrow, and all my stuff's being packed up in a box, so that's going to be fun too. But anyways, thank you for listening tonight, and also thank you everyone for the questions. If you enjoy the show, tell all your friends, and if you listen to us on iTunes, go ahead and rate and review us as well. And we will be back next week at 7 p.m. on Tuesday night, again, where we will be reviewing the Texans' probable loss to the Minnesota Vikings, and we will look ahead to Week 5 against the Detroit Lions. Man, I just got really thirsty out of nowhere. I'm Matt Weston. Thanks for listening to Bell Road Radio. And thank you for being on tonight, BFG.
Peace.
Listen to me. I thought it was pretty good.